Welcome back. Good morning, Charlie and Lisa on News Talk 620 WVMT. Our next guest this morning is the author of Blind Vision. It's a series of books, in fact, three of them. He's also the founder of Imperfect Messenger Foundation. His name is Curtis Greco. He joins us on the hotline this morning. Curtis, thank you for joining us here on Charlie, Ernie, and Lisa.
Hi, fellas. Well, I should also say ladies. Great to be with you.
Well, that's debatable, but yeah, that's thank you, Curtis.
Curtis, tell me about your organization, the Imperfect Messenger Foundation. What's it all about?
The Imperfect Messenger Foundation is an entity that we put together to respond to changes, social changes and political changes over the last few years, particularly as it relates to how the media addresses it. The foundation has a fundamental root that lies in the historical significance of Thomas Jefferson's, John Locke's Epicurean thought that holds as the foundation the supremacy of the individual that is the fundamental core of human liberty or freedom expressed through human liberty. And looking at the world around us, we, you know, doing some speaking commitments and things that I do as part of my own affairs, this material started to develop, and the foundation was actually created to host the interplay of dialogue on some of these pressing political, economic, and social issues, which really probably is, frankly, in all fairness to the subject, are supremely related to one another.
Mm-hmm. Now, the series Blind Vision, there's three books in the series. Tell me quickly about the three books.
Blind Vision is the master title for a three-book series. Each of the three books deal with specific components of an overall subject relating to U.S. history and as it relates to the view of our present economic environment. Volume 1 deals with the fundamentals that lie back of what it means when we talk about we hold these truths. We move to value given, value received, which talks about fundamental economics and why the misinterpretation of capitalism has evolved into almost a punitive sort of interpretation. Volume 3 compiles the components of books 1 and 2 and responds to a question that I always had in looking at the polemic speech of the day where we talk about politics and Democrat, Republican, and how they speak to the questions of what's wrong in the United States with our political system and what's taking place economic. But we point fingers at issues, but we don't talk about issues relative to solutions. So Blind, the third series, has really resolves to the final component in that particular volume where I present stimulus concepts. And there's, I think we synthesized them down to about 12 of them, which is a direct response to that question. Instead of talking about what's wrong, create a solution, create a game plan, and work on that.
But
and so I offered suggestions for it.
Yeah, haven't we created a game plan? We've had a stimulus package that was passed by Congress. Is it working or is it not working?
Well, the stimulus package, and this is part and parcel what I talk about in the series, is a response that you would expect to be productive, but the reality is that government, from economic theory, from a Keynesian theory, seems to orchestrate the perception that government can stimulate the economy. But in reality, government can only be an ally to that process. The stimulus package illustrates that precise example of how government interplay within the system, whether it be through centralized health care, Social Security, Medicaid, actually becomes a form of protectionism as it relates to economic results. The theory being that the concept of economy is not a top-down concept. It's a bottom-up concept. The native economy...
Okay. No, I'm just going to say, hasn't the auto industry seen some success through the stimulus package, though?
Well, again, it depends on one's perspective. If we think of it as success of saving a dying paradigm and putting it on life support, then I suppose it could be seen that way. But I think that the greater question might also be is, what is wrong with the system that caused it to collapse in the first place? And if by putting money into it, taxpayer money into it, we actually suspend it's reinvention. We suspend the cure, or we suspend the native concepts of self-correcting components of a vibrant economic system that will articulate itself, self-correcting mechanisms that will cause it to tend towards self-correction, then we don't really see the best possible out of it. We only suspend it. And I hope that that point gets, I hope I conveyed the point clear.
Well, you say, it's suspended. I think that the reason the auto industry was doing so poorly was because they were building cars that Americans didn't want to buy, didn't want to drive. They've, by giving them a shot in the arm, you've allowed them to kind of go back to the drawing board and create some cars that we do want to buy. And I think that's why we're seeing that sales are going up now, because they do have vehicles that we want to buy. That's not so much a suspension if they continue on that route, though, is it, Curtis?
Again, you know, if the system, I guess, you know, it's one of those questions, how do you answer a question after the fact? In other words, you can't really anticipate, I would be disingenuous to say, you know, that it would not have happened, because, you know, that assumes that I have a counter or a parallel universe where it didn't happen. But, it, you know, we don't know that. What I am suggesting, however, is that the question may also be relevant to that whenever you burden a system exponentially with demands upon it, such as in the case with the automobile industry, where the burden of the system becomes a global concept, where you have corporations expanding their domain outside of the United States, where they no longer have a domestic focus, number one. Number two, whenever you burden those or allow the government concept of control through influential policies, where corporations tend to avoid confrontation with governments and become acquiescent or acquiesce to demands of government, then you don't actually get the best possible performance out of them. For example, and again, you can juxtapose that to government functions as on their own. Social Security and Medicaid is a perfect example of that, where the concept sounds wonderful, the idea of providing this concept of a social safety net. But the better question is government actually capable of managing that type of a feature? Consequently, back and flipping back to your question about, you know, the automobile industry, I don't think it's fair necessarily to say that the reason why Detroit's product line failed to meet the interest of the American buyer was necessarily the cause of their failure. I think it may be really more to the point where it is actually a consequence of much greater or other things, where there was not a necessity, there was a hubris, there was an arrogance in the system that said, well, we don't have to do it. And the degradation proceeds from there.
Kurt,
likewise in government.
Let me jump in with the stimulus package as we take a look. I'm just watching the business news in the studio this morning and seeing that unemployment rate continues to rise. So certainly you can make the argument that the stimulus package is not working. People are not going back to work. So, you know, with all of that, and, you know, I think you sort of started off your conversation with you can point fingers. Let's get to some options here. What should the federal government be doing, or does the federal government just step aside and let the marketplace work it out?
Well, you know, the government has a place, to be sure. I think that ultimately, when you look at, for example, and to answer your question, if you look at things, for example, like the Tea Party, it's a great concept in the sense of getting the civilian components of the nation getting disturbed and their energy and excited about getting engaged in the policies and the direction of the government. But here's the problem with it. You know, it becomes a divisive issue where the conversation becomes a distinction between Democrat versus Republican. I think it's a greater issue. I think it has to deal specifically with your question about what do you do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the greatest strength of the American concept of a representative form of government, where the people become participants in that process, which clearly we have not over the last 30 to 60 years. But to get to the point is to rally around a common ideal. You know, Hillary Clinton created this concept or had a commentary years ago where she says, you know, it takes a village. Well, I don't actually agree with that. I think that it takes a convergence of the people around a common ideal, and that common ideal we speak to in Book 3 in the Valor and Prosperity concept. And this goes to the issue of what do you do, and where does the government fit in this? And I think the government, the challenge with the government is that it really should function as an administrator, so and a guiding light, leadership, right? So some of, to get to the points that I think that really we clearly should look at is, I think number one, I think we really need to deal and address with the severity of the immigration issue. Number two, I think there's we've got to suspend some of the excessive spending and foreign subsidies. I think we really have got to look at recreating a functional Social Security Medicaid system that really extricates that administrative process away from the federal government. I mean, right now, the unfunded mandates at the federal level are over $105 trillion, growing at $1 trillion a year. That's just in Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare. So we need to deal with those things. We need to really, truly get to the critical component of the U.S. economy, and this is where I spend most of my time talking about, and that deals with this area. We've got to get people back to work. If you cannot create a vibrant economic environment if there is not the means by the public, which is the fundamental driving force of any economic growth, comes again from the native economy. That's the bottom up. And native economy is the best way to think of it is that component of demand that is in perpetual and constant search of supply. So we need to deal with the issue of the Internal Revenue Code. The Internal Revenue Code, we have a tax system that is punitive on the most important component of a vibrant economic engine, and that is individual income. You know, we've recreated the revenue-generating vehicle in the U.S., by shifting the burden of subsidizing the government's functions, whether you agree with what the government does or not, but we have shifted it to the individual level.
Curtis, if you were president, we just have a few minutes left here, so, you know, I always hear people talk about, well, this is what I would do. If you were president, what would you do to turn this economy around?
First thing, I would deal directly first with the Internal Revenue Code. We've got to get people back into the capacity of having disposable income. That's number one. I mean, I think that I would deal directly with the idea of suspending tax levels at certain income levels. For example, in the book we talk deliberately about, you know, breaking off income, to the taxable income at the $350,000 level and below. So provided that you have a self-funded retirement component and a self-funded medical coverage. I would move directly into dealing with the Internal Revenue Code, specifically as it relates to how income tax revenue is generated at the corporate and the at the corporate level by doing a variety of different things. And I know our time is getting limited, so unless you cue me to go into it in greater detail, I'll just say that we need to really focus on that. Secondly, the government needs to orchestrate an economic environment where industry is drawn back into the United States, where this concept of globalism is suspended, not because we are in need of it, but more importantly because it doesn't work. When you export the economic engine of an economy, then you export its ability to survive. You export its ability to sustain itself. And that's exactly why in the United States you have a government spending at a rate of 2.2 times what the actual native economic engine in this country produces on an annual basis.
Curtis Greco with us this morning. He's the author of a series of books called Blind Vision. He's also the founder of Imperfect Messenger Foundation, and he's joining us this morning talking about the economic stimulus program. Quickly, we've got about just 30 seconds. What are your thoughts on a flat tax, Curtis?
I think the flat tax concept on the surface sounds very appealing, but the reality of it is that a flat tax uniformly applied, again, sounds interesting, but here's the problem with it. Not everybody earns income at a uniform level such that the disposable consequence of taking 10% or 20% across the board of income does not generate the most important part, and that is the ability of the individual uniformly to have the ability to participate in the economic engine.
And quickly, you talked about revising some of the tax code. Would everybody pay tax, or would there be up to a certain point you make a certain amount of money and you don't pay tax? How would it work?
Real quickly, there's a distinction that we need to get back to, and that is the distinction between passive income and active income. Income tax should be mostly leveraged on passive income. Secondly, corporations have to be thought of as non-native economic units. They're not corporal form, and they need to be institute, there needs to be a reconfiguration of how we look at how income is generated. To answer your question specifically, to the individual is the one I look at mostly. That is the driving engine, and I would cut income tax completely. Below $350,000 is what I use in the book as an example.
All right. Curtis, we got a break. I got David Letterman's top 10 coming up. Website.
Hey, don't miss that.
People want to find out more info.
Go to www.theimperfectmessenger.com. Blog links, Facebook links are there. And, of course, hyperlinks to Amazon to purchase the books as well. And they are also available at your local bookstores.
All right. Thanks, Curtis.
Hey, thanks, folks.